Channel open. Welcome back to Weekly Trek, a proud member of the Tricorder Transmissions podcast network and presented in partnership with TrekCore.com. I am your host, Alex Perry.
What's today's date? The date.
Today's show was recorded on December 18th, 2020. This will be our last regular episode of the year, though we will have a year in review episode coming up over the holiday period. And it is current through the Star Trek Discovery episode, Terra Firma Part 2, so beware of spoilers. All right, let's get into the show.
Good day, Voyager, and welcome to A Briefing with Neelix. It's a catchy title, isn't it?
Weekly Trek is a 30-minute news show covering the biggest stories from the Star Trek franchise. We are in the new golden age of Star Trek. There are 6 television shows in production, and I think one of those shows might have been teased a little bit this week, possibly more on the way, and enough merchandise to fill the Bajoran wormhole. So stick with me, and I'll help you sort the real facts from a lot of the Dominion propaganda that you'll find online. But I can't do this alone. And my guest this week is someone you may know as Locutus of Borg on Twitter, but to his non-Borg friends, he's Conrad. Conrad, welcome to Weekly Trek.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on this week.
All right, Conrad, I ask my guest this question every week. I want to know something that's got you feeling good about Star Trek at the moment. What's got you moving at Warp 10?
I think what's got me moving is the announcement of Lower Decks finally being released officially, let's call it, outside of the States and Canada. I have to say I was quite lucky to see it, and thank you very much to my American friends for facilitating that, but I'm incredibly excited that there's so many Trek fans around the world who haven't seen the series and haven't really enjoyed what I thought was a fantastic first series of Trek to actually see it for the first time. I'm excited for them, and I'm really looking forward to actually watching it all the way through again, spotting everything I maybe didn't spot the first time around, all those great little homages, etc. So yeah, I'm very excited that that's finally been sorted out. And it's going to be released internationally.
Long, long, long overdue. And our top story this week. So I will hold further comment until we get into the news. And the thing I'm feeling good about Star Trek this week is, you know what? Honestly, those of you who read my review on TrekCore for last week's episode, I was the reviewer for Terra Firma Part 1, know that I had my issues with the episode. I'm happy to report I did enjoy Part 2 more than I enjoyed Part 1, and I loved the eventual reveal of the Guardian of Forever as Carl. Obviously, it was heavily teased in Part 1, but you had to have a magnifying glass and 20/20 vision in order to figure out what the headlines were on the newspaper that he was reading that were sort of very strong hints and allusions back to The City on the Edge of Forever, the original series episode that introduced the Guardian. But that whole sequence at the end in which he talked about how during the Temporal Wars, that again, another sort of Temporal Wars reference, we're now up to, I think, like our 5th or 6th episode that has some kind of Temporal Wars reference in it, that people had tried to use him as a weapon. And so now he seems to have this worthiness test. In order to pass through the Guardian of Forever, you need to demonstrate that you are worthy to do so. And the whole 2 episodes were sort of about Georgiou proving her worthiness to do it. And I just thought that was a really cool idea and spin on the canon, and, you know, sort of responsive to this temporal war that has happened at some point between the 24th century and today in Discovery. And, you know, obviously the Guardian of Forever would probably have a role to play in that because he is a giant time travel device. So I just thought that was very, very cool and very well done. Carl, what did you think about the Guardian of Forever?
I thought that was a fantastic reveal. I liked the fact that they kind of left us guessing, was Carl a Q or what was he? And I know there'd been a lot of hints around the Guardian Forever. I love the newspaper and the fact that, I think it was TrekCore as well, really pulled that apart to show us all the great little teasers that are on there, and even references to the USS Janola and the Worf winning a battle of competition. All that stuff was fantastic. I'm kind of with you. I think that I wasn't completely in love with Part 1. I enjoy the Mirror Universe, but I think it's kind of been overdone a little bit. Obviously, Deep Space Nine did it a lot, and Discovery, you know, there was a massive plot line around the whole central part of Season 1 that involved the Mirror Universe. So the first part, I was a little bit, oh, here we go again, back to the Mirror Universe. You know, it's all eyeshadows and sideways stares and plotting and stuff like that. But I have to say the second part, I think, really came into its own. And I think a lot of that was just down to the sheer acting chops of Michelle Yeoh. I think the kind of vulnerability that she almost gave the Empress in that situation, almost tackling with what she'd learned from the regular Discovery crew and then going back into the Mirror Universe, and how she was almost trying to change things, still with her own sort of brand of snarkiness and her way of doing things. But I thought the scenes with Saru were incredibly touching. And it was also great to see the whole crew have their moment. There was so much kick-ass moments in it. I thought it was really good. There was a little bit of a contact thing about it when it was revealed that for her, months had passed, 3 months, I think it was, and only a few minutes had passed for Burnham, or the original Burnham, or our Burnham, Prime Burnham, let's call it that. And I kind of like that she'd experienced all this and it was an exercise. So I thought it was a fantastic reveal. And I think when we got that original voice of "I am the Guardian of Forever" and the door shattered and reformed into the gateway that we've all seen in the past, that was a brilliant moment. Yeah, absolutely. I think that really paid off everything that came before it.
Oh, yes. A spine-chilling moment. All right. Well, with that, let's turn to the week's top stories.
There's a war going on, and I'm a reporter.
CBS has provided international Star Trek fans with an early Christmas present, or I suppose you could call it a very late summer present, depending on your perspective, by announcing this week that they have signed a deal with Amazon to distribute Star Trek Lower Decks internationally. The show, which until now had only been available in the US and Canada, will be available to stream on Amazon Prime in Australia, New Zealand, Europe, the United Kingdom, Japan, India, and more. The full first season of 10 episodes is expected to drop all at once on January the 22nd, so you will not have to wait until March for the season finale. You can binge it all in one day. No word on how and when season 2 will premiere on the service. No release date has yet been announced in the US, but we do anticipate that it will also be on Amazon alongside the second season of Star Trek Picard. Conrad, this is long overdue, but tell me, you're a UK Trekkie. We talked about this a little bit at the top. You said you'd had the opportunity to see the series already. So for your British Trekkie friends who have not had the opportunity to see Lower Decks yet, what kind of advice would you give them going into it?
I would say enjoy the ride. I think it's a fantastic slice of Star Trek. I think it's a bit frenetic to start off with, but it settles down nicely. I think the humour is great. I think the homages and the way it reveres what's come before but doesn't take the mickey out of it is really well balanced. And boy, it just in for a fantastic show. I can't wait for season 2. And I can't wait to fire up Amazon Prime and watch it all properly on the big TV and just get back to that sort of TNG era and just enjoy it. It's amazing. I think it's just one of the finest Trek series we've had.
And do you have anything you'd particularly like to see out of the second season of the show?
Well, it's hard to say because I don't want to spoil anything. I'd like to see more of where Boimler is now. I hope that situation in the sort of finale isn't resolved straight away. I think there's a lot of fun to have where they've kind of left the characters. And I think, like anybody else, I just want more cameos. I think the cameos that they did were done really well. I think they weren't over the top. They were pertinent to the storylines. They were fun. And if we can get some DS9 and some Voyager, hell, if they can figure it out, throw in some Enterprise cast as well, I'm all for that. I think the cameos just really add a nice flavour to the Lower Decks universe and remind us of this lovely sandpit that everybody's playing in.
And I think it's an encouraging sign too that there was news this week that Mike McMahon has signed a new deal with CBS, a production deal to do more projects with the network, but to do them with CBS and not do them with other networks. I mean, obviously, we know that Lower Decks was initially picked up for 2 seasons of 10 episodes apiece, so 20 episodes total. But I think we're all hoping that there might be the possibility for a season 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 for Lower Decks in the years ahead. And I think this news about McMahon's deal with CBS is a positive one for those of us hoping that once season 2 of Lower Decks finishes at some point in 2021, they might pivot around and say, but yet there's more, season 3 coming soon.
Absolutely. I'd love for Lower Decks to run as long as it can. There's a huge, rich tapestry of Star Trek to play with. There's some fun tropes that we all talk about as fans and we spot them all the time. And, you know, Lower Decks had fun with those. Again, I'm not going to go into too much detail for those who haven't seen it, but I think there's this beautiful universe to mine. And I think the work that's been done so far really has built a solid foundation of some fantastic characters, both the ones that appear, you know, like Boimler, etc., and recurring characters. And I think there's a lot that can be done out of this. I think it's got a lot of legs and it could run for quite a while.
I mean, totally the unexpected gem highlight of 2021 for me, which I'm sure I'll talk about more next week in our year in review episode. But the show was such a revelation and a surprise for the fact that it ended up being as incredible as it was. And, you know, I started off being a bit of a skeptic about the idea of an adult comedy Star Trek show in animated format. And I was totally wrong about that. And I'm so pleased that I was.
And I think we needed that fun. I mean, Picard, it was quite a serious show. It had a lot of weight behind it. It was the return of Jean-Luc, and it had to carry a lot of weight on its shoulders. I think Lower Decks just wanted to have fun, and I think it did. That doesn't mean it's not serious at points, and there are some fantastic moments that pull at the heartstrings. But I think also with Prodigy coming, there's some great potential there to also interweave with that series, to interweave with Picard and even Discovery. I mean, God knows how they're going to do it, but I get the sense that this could just be a joyous place for Star Trek, whilst the other shows can be more serious, more informative, etc. And Lower Decks can sort of play around with all the various Star Trek series that are either we've had historically or are in production.
This week's Star Trek Discovery episode, Terra Firma Part 2, included, as we were talking about at the top of the episode, the reveal that the mysterious Carl from last week's episode, Terra Firma Part 1, was in fact the Guardian of Forever. Well, Ryan Britt over at Inverse had the opportunity to interview episode writers Bo-Young Kim, Erica Lippolt, and Kalinda Vasquez about the decision to use the Guardian as the means for Giorgio to exit Star Trek Discovery and what that might mean for the forthcoming Section 31 show. After toying with the idea of using a Q or potentially a time weapon from the temporal Cold Wars, the writers settled on the Guardian to fulfill a series-long dream. "We've been itching to find a way to use the Guardian on Discovery," Kim and Lippolt tell Inverse. "The Guardian also provides flexibility in that it has only appeared in that one episode and the animated series episode yesteryear, which somewhat amusingly broke the rules established in the TOS episode, so we felt there was room to do something new and different with it." Kim and Lippolt also discussed the original ideas for this episode, which did not include a return trip to the Mirror Universe, but rather, quote, "Burnham and Giorgio were going to beam down to the planet expecting to find the Guardian, and instead come across a lone house with a garden, not unlike the house in TNG's The Survivors. Its sole occupant, a mysterious gardener, would turn out to be the Guardian. Giorgio was going to live out her final hours there, choosing to have a perfect day with Prime Burnham, and it involved baking an apple pie." Well, the writers ultimately decided to move away from this story in favor of something that had more catharsis, and so Giorgio's return trip to the Mirror Universe was born. And where did Giorgio end up? Well, neither writer was willing to reveal much about the forthcoming Section 31 show, except to say, quote, "Giorgio is sent back to a point in time that she doesn't expect, but it ends up being exactly where she needs to be. A lot of care was put into developing Giorgio's arc this season. As for what it sets up for Giorgio beyond that, only space-time will tell." Conrad, we've talked a little bit about Terra Firma Parts 1 and 2, but does this have you excited? Has it whet your appetite for a Section 31 show?
I would say I was a bit reluctant about the thought of a Section 31 show. I thought they were a fantastic addition to the franchise. I thought they were played out very well within Deep Space Nine. I'm kind of glad that it's kind of been left to rest for the moment, because I feel, obviously, yes, we've had him in Discovery Season 2, and I'm not sure. I'm excited, but I've still got a few reservations, because I don't want Section 31 to be overused. I think it was, like I say, a fantastic addition. I think it worked really well within Deep Space Nine, and I'm going to be open-minded. I'm always open-minded when it comes to Star Trek, because I love it. And I know what happened is, I will end up watching it anyway. As to where Giorgio ends up, where will she end up? I mean, that line about not where we expect her to be kind of leaves me thinking we're not going to see her in Strange New Worlds. We're not going to see her back into that timeline. And I think that's fine. I think that's been played out. I would kind of like her to appear almost in Picard's timeline, or just beyond, or around that gap period between Nemesis and beginning Picard. You know, we've had the Picard aspect filled in through the fantastic novel from Una McCormack. But I'd like to see maybe her in that area, to see what was going on at the time from a wider perspective and not just the focus on Picard. So that could be interesting. Or you never know. I mean, the effect for the Guardian this time around, I thought, looked like the old Time Tunnel series. So you never know. She might end up just being a Section 31 hopping through time secret agent, almost quantum leaping and righting wrongs and nudging the Federation towards the right way and things like that. I honestly have no idea. Now, that could be interesting. Quantum Leap meets Section 31. I don't know. But I'm excited to see what happens. I think they've got to keep it fresh. I don't think they can just return to Section 31 as we saw it in Discovery Season 2. And I think they'd be foolish to replicate the way that Section 31 operated in Deep Space Nine. I think they need to do something fresh, and I am excited to see what they do with this character and with this organization going forward.
Yeah, I have two theories for the setting for the Section 31 show, one of which I'm going to give at the end of the episode. But the second one is sort of one of the ones you gave, which is setting it around the Picard time. I mean, we know that Section 31 exists during the time frame of Deep Space Nine, that it's been pushed further underground. I mean, I think there could be something very, again, cathartic about the idea of a show that revolves around the ultimate end and destruction of Section 31 and Georgiou having some part to play in those events that could take place around the late 24th century, you know, Picard timeframe, maybe slightly later, maybe even slightly earlier. I think that would be a really interesting spin on the idea. I'm also very enamored by the possibility of a Quantum Leap style show where you could hop around different time periods. I wonder from a production perspective, since you'd have to be building sort of new sets every week and that kind of stuff, whether that's something that they could do in a modern environment, but it's certainly something that would be very cool.
Absolutely. And I think the interesting thing about the Section 31 show is, apart from knowing that it's going to star Michelle Yeoh, we don't know really anything else about it. We have no idea about the wider cast. So I think there's a lot still to be revealed. And I'm looking forward to getting those little nuggets of information as it builds up to the ultimate production and release in the future.
Yeah, my wishes were not fulfilled, but I was expecting that possibly after the release of this episode, we were going to get maybe a press announcement about the Section 31 show today saying, yep, it's happening, and maybe giving us a few details about it. That obviously has not happened, at least as of, you know, late afternoon US time on Friday, December the 18th, but could happen maybe next week sometime. But yeah, that would be fun. And I guess we will just have to be patient and wait and see what the future holds, or in Georgiou's case, the past. Well, Star Trek and horror fans alike were surprised and thrilled by the appearance of acclaimed Canadian director David Cronenberg as the mysterious Kovich in Die Trying earlier this season on Star Trek Discovery, and then his subsequent appearance in last week's Terra Firma Part 1. Cronenberg, in an interview with Variety this week, finally answered a burning question about his appearance. How and why did he end up acting on a Star Trek show? "I'm cheap and I'm available," Cronenberg revealed. "I live in Toronto, and it's being shot in Toronto. I think that's my main qualification. But I got a note through people that I know, casting people, saying that Alex Kurtzman was thinking of having me do a spot on the show. I said, of course, I'd be delighted. Who wouldn't be, especially as an original Star Trek fan, and for Canadians too. I mean, because William Shatner, one of the lead actors on the original Star Trek, was a very well-known Canadian actor. To have him be in a successful US TV series was quite thrilling. So it's kind of come full circle that Star Trek should be shooting in Toronto. And so, of course, I was delighted to be part of the multiple universes of Star Trek." Cronenberg was rather tight-lipped about his character, Kovich, except to reveal that his appearances would continue into season 4, which is shooting right now in Toronto. But he did have this to say about working on Discovery. "They are fabulous sets. I don't think I've ever built a set myself that was as complex and as inventive in that particular sci-fi way as they have here in Toronto. Very impressive. I mean, I'm really kind of a dilettante dropping in the show, which has been ongoing for years, as you know. They're just so polished and everybody is so professional, and it's a lovely experience. And of course, I was interested in the handling of the visual effects and what was there on the show that was practical and what was obviously going to be done later in post-production." Conrad, are you enjoying David Cronenberg's guest stars on Discovery so far this season as Kovich, and are you looking forward to seeing him come back in season 4?
Absolutely. I love having Cronenberg on the show.
I mean,
I don't think any of us would have thought that would be a casting that we'd ever see. I'm hoping that we get a fly reference. I would like to see a reference to a Brundle fly or something. That would be quite cool. Maybe a Scanners reference, but that could be a little bit extreme. We have had exploding heads in Star Trek before.
Very true.
I think he adds a really nice, mysterious, weighted quality. As for his character, Section 31. He's got to be Section 31. I mean, he's kind of pointing us in that direction. But I think we're going to get a lot more around. I know the big mystery at the moment is the burn. But as you said, there's so many references to the Temporal War and the Temporal Accords and all these sort of things. I'm really hoping we start to get to see more of an insight into what happened during that period. Is Cronenberg future guy from Enterprise? I mean, I know that Berman said it was always Jonathan Archer, well, that's how it would have played out, but could it be Kovich? Yeah, that'd be amazing. But I think he just has this really nice mysterious quality, and I think he's a fantastic addition to the cast, and I'm really glad that season three won't be the only season we get him in. I'm really looking forward to seeing how they develop this character if they're going to move him on to season four as well. And all I can say is, obviously, with his grey hair and glasses, it's a perfect cosplay. I'm going to have to get a suit and see if I can do a Kovic at a convention at some point.
Yeah, you have got the sort of shock of hair that would work very well for the Kovic cosplay, Conrad. I think you'd be a lock for it. All you need is the glasses and the tie.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, he doesn't wear glasses because he needs them, but I do, unfortunately.
I have really enjoyed Cronenberg's Kovic. I mean, he's only been in two episodes so far, but I enjoy the mystery behind the character. I like the fact that, you know, he's just sort of there and, you know, it's just so fun. I mean, they didn't do this interview until his second appearance. So we've sort of had 3 weeks of being like, you know what, David Cronenberg, the acclaimed Canadian director who doesn't really act. I mean, he's done a little bit of acting, but he's not an actor, is acting in Star Trek Discovery. Like, how and why did that ever come about? And the fact that the story is so ultimately fairly mundane in some ways is actually even funnier and feels to me ultimately appropriate. I'm so glad this character is going to continue showing up in season four. I don't love the idea of Section 31 having persisted for the, you know, 900 years past the 23rd century. I would hope at some point we became smart enough to get rid of it, but there's certainly some kind of, not ulterior motive, but he clearly has some kind of agenda, some kind of backstory that has not been revealed to us yet. And I'm really excited to see what it ultimately ends up being. And lastly this week, Variety had a second big Star Trek interview, this time with costume designer Gersha Phillips, about Discovery's return to the Mirror Universe. Phillips revealed that she had some heads up about the show's return to the Mirror Universe, having been informed last summer that it would feature in Georgiou's story arc, exiting her from Discovery. "We knew we were going to jump into the future because of Michelle Yao," she said, "and how she was getting out of our world and into the Section 31 world, which is the next series, so it was an early conversation." Phillips talked about how she saw Discovery's return to the Mirror Universe as an opportunity to improve on her costumes designs that had appeared in Season 1. "I wanted to do a better job this time in terms of how we made everything," she said, "especially the breastplates and overlays. The idea was the Emperor was in her prime. I called it the 2.0 version because this time we wanted to do it better. Last time, on our first pass there, we didn't have the time or budget. I talked about wanting to elevate everything, and boy, did everything feel elevated this time." That was me talking, not Gersha Phillips. "I recommend you check out the full article, which you can find in the show notes on TrekCore, particularly if you are a costumer, for a lot of great discussion about how some of the new costume pieces, like the fabulous sun-shaped headpiece worn by Empress Georgiou that appeared in part one, came to be." Phillips also revealed that her inspirations for the new Mirror Universe costumes were Space 1999 and Logan's Run. She said, "I remember how clean that looked. The thing is, there's no mystery to the way things are appearing on TV compared to then now, because everything has 4K or 5K and you can no longer hide anything. So the idea was to push it that much further." Conrad, are you enjoying the costumes used so far on Discovery Season 3? And how did you feel about that return to the sort of very striking Mirror Universe costumes?
I love the reference to Space 1999, especially because I think the uniforms in that series are fantastic. They are very clean and very cool and very 70s with the bell bottoms, and we didn't get those in the Mirror Universe costumes. But I like the fact that the costumers and the designers are fans of not just Star Trek but science fiction, and I love how they can call into different inspirations from different series in the past. I thought the costumes look fantastic. I mean, they always do, and the amount of amazing cosplay that's already been done with these costumes is just incredible. I think we're going to see a few headpieces especially going forward. I did like the fact that when Georgiou stood there in front of the Charon with its mycelia reactor, it was just glowing in the middle of it. That was just so beautifully framed. And I think this time round, the costumes just looked a little bit more everyday, as it were. Not in terms of the decorative aspect, but they looked like they could be worn every day. Rather than the first time round, they almost looked just really almost uncomfortable. Culber's red outfit, I thought, was fantastic. I mean, I love that. In the Mirror Universe, doctors don't wear white, they wear red, you know, obviously because there's so much blood flowing everywhere. It's easier just to not be able to see it on their uniforms. Uh-huh. But no, I love the detail. I love all the badges as well, the detail of all different badges, especially that Burnham had. And yeah, I think the Mirror Universe costumes are fantastic. I'm also loving all the new 32nd century Starfleet outfits. I really can't wait till the costumers start making those. I definitely have got my eye on a couple of those. And everything down to even just books look. Everything is really well designed and fits really nicely into that universe. You know, you've got a whole mixture of different types from, say, the Mirror Universe, the Prime Universe, and the more on the fringes with the Emerald Chain and things like that. I think costume designers are doing a fantastic job this series. And yeah, I can't wait to see what the fans and the community comes up with, because I think there's probably quite a few cosplayers eagerly beaving over the designs and freeze framing all the episodes to see what they can pull together. And I think the next time we have a convention and we can all be together, I think there's going to be some absolutely outstanding costumes that have been created.
Yeah, something I thought was done really effectively in these two episodes that, you know, was an advancement over season one. One, to the point you made, like, these costumes actually look like things that real people wear rather than like TV costumes, which was more kind of what the season one-y type Mirror Universe costumes felt like to me.
Absolutely. No, absolutely.
The other thing I thought they did really effectively was, and this was both as a consequence of the costuming and the makeup, they actually made the costumes feel a bit, and honestly, this is for both the men and the women, they made them feel a lot sexier than they were when they appeared in season one without showing more skin in the process, right? I mean, that's one thing I think Discovery has, you know, not done very rightly, is, you know, sort of lean on the kind of, you know, Enterprise was very strongly criticized for its sort of TNA, even though, you know, I think it was sort of bi-gendered, you know, there's plenty of shirtless Trip Tucker running around, but like, that's not something that Discovery does. But in just the way that the costumes fit very well in the makeup, just that fabulous makeup that Mira Burnham was wearing, for example, I mean, just the eye makeup was off the wall, incredible. You know, it sort of evoked that earlier sense of, like, from the original series Mirror Mirror, you know, where they were trying to go for a much sexier place, but it being the 60s, their solution to that was remove more clothes. It now being the 2020s, I think just in the way those costumes were designed, you know, it was just so much more vibrant and alive and interesting, I think, even than it the first appearance of the Mirror Universe in season one. So, you know, for all that you and I maybe have some issues with the way the story played out over the last two episodes, they were just visually so impressive.
Absolutely. I think, I like that point you made, that the Mirror Universe has always been a slightly darker, sexier version of Star Trek, and they retained that, but they didn't have to have loads of flesh on show. And that's such a great point. I thought the costumes looked amazing. I thought Mary Wiseman as Killy absolutely rocked that hairstyle. She
totally
fantastic. And she had this, I like the sense that she gave her character of, I mean, obviously in season one, we didn't really get a sense of Captain Killy. We've waited all this time to experience, you know, what was she like? And she had this great menacing quality, but there was almost a tongue-in-cheek aspect about it where she almost wasn't taking it too seriously, or there was almost like a sadistic edge to it where she was having fun being that evil, especially, I suppose, when she gets to press the button and, you know, torment poor Burnham over and over and over. But yeah, I agree. The costumes were just out of this world. And I think they really added a lot more depth to the Mirror Universe. And as you said, made it feel more lived in than the first time we saw it.
All right. Well, we've talked about the facts. And now let's speculate on what's going to happen in the future of Star Trek.
You make some very good points, Captain. But it's still all speculation and theory.
So each week, I and my guest give you a wish or theory we're nurturing about any of the shows or the future of the franchise. So Conrad, let's hear your theory or wish for this week.
I'm hoping that with only three episodes to go, we do get a resolution of the burn. I wouldn't like it to be left as a cliffhanger. Oh, we're almost there. You know, Discovery likes to have those mystery boxes and breadcrumbs. And I really hope we get a resolution of the burn. I'm sure it's going to set up, I see season four as being more the expansion of the Federation. So they solve the mystery of the burn, or they understand what caused it, figure out a way around it, and we start building towards the expansion of the Federation again in the future, start bringing in more of the worlds it lost. I'd love to see Earth rejoin the Federation, and I hope we see that in season four. But I don't want Discovery to leave that core mystery that it's kind of pinned its season around hanging into season four. Obviously, there's only three episodes to go, I think. So we haven't got long. So I hope they kind of focuses now for the next three episodes, is to resolve the burn. What's with the music that we've been hearing? Where's Grey gone? You know, we need to revisit some of these story threads that have maybe been put on pause whilst we've had these last couple of episodes of resolving the sort of Giorgio back to Section 31 situation. So that's my big wish. I want Discovery to have a nice, clean wrap up around its central mystery. I don't mind if it starts laying breadcrumbs for the next one or for what season four is going to be, but I would be a little bit disappointed if we are left hanging for another 9 to 12 months to understand fully what happened with the burn. I think if they've kind of laid that hat down and they said this is the core mystery, that's what we need an answer for.
And do you have any particular theories that you're sort of looking at for, you know, what the actual story is here?
I was in line with the speculation that the ship that the signal, the distress signal was coming from, was going to be Discovery from the short treks, from Calypso. Well, that's been blown out of the water. So right now, no, I don't. And I mean, I'm glad it's not going to be anything related to Burnham. I'm glad it's nothing to do with the Red Angel suit and her mum. So Unification 3 kind of put that theory to rest, because I think that would have been a little bit too much. The focus is on Burnham and she caused this. So right now, I think we're in a bit of an area where we don't really know. Obviously, next week, we're going to go and find out. I think, I can't remember what the episode's called. That's bad of me. But from the trailer, it does look like we are now going to head to the Nebula, enter that ship, find out what's going on. It looks like there's some slightly strangeness. But right now, no, I don't. And I quite like that. I quite like that it's still a mystery at this point. Some of the theories, you know, we've all loved playing with the theories. We've all speculated. And right now, I don't know. And I'm enjoying that. I can't wait to find out. What about yourself?
Yeah, I like that too.
Have you got any theories?
And I'm looking forward to it. You know, honestly, no. I mean, I was with you. I thought, you know, we were going to find out the Discovery had some role to play in the burn. I'm still not entirely unconvinced that's not going to happen through some way, shape or form. But certainly doesn't seem like the direction they're going in. And I'm glad for that, because I think I probably will be quite critical of it if, you know, Discovery itself has some role in it, because then it's sort of it's a redux of season two where you end up solving a mystery and you discover that you were the reason for the mystery existing in the first place by the end of it. So I hope that's not the case. And I don't think they will necessarily go down that path. I mean, it could end up eating my words. But yeah, like you, I sort of don't really have a sense of, you know, what the explanation is outside of that. And I do really enjoy that, because it potentially opens the door for us seeing something new and interesting and, you know, that it introduces new elements to the show that we can all enjoy.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's good to be heading towards the back end of the season a little bit in the dark about what's going to happen. And yeah, it really adds to that excitement of each week when that next episode drops. Yep, can't wait to see what happens.
Well, so here's my theory. I gave one theory for when the Section 31 show could be set, which is at the sort of end of the Burnham era. How about setting it at the start of the Burnham era and seeing the creation of Section 31, or its very early days, by setting the show in the sort of Enterprise era of Star Trek? We've not had much to revisit it, though it did sort of get name-checked quite frequently during the Kelvin timeline movies, and we've seen sort of bits and pieces of Enterprise paraphernalia in the early seasons of Star Trek Discovery. But you know what I think would be really cool would be, let's get the story of the Romulan War, which happened a year or two after the end of Enterprise, but told through the perspective of Philippa Georgiou, Section 31 agent. We know it existed at that point in the timeline, who helps, you know, sort of shepherd Starfleet through the Romulan War to the end. The long-teased, never-seen Romulan War, I would like that to be the focus of attention for the Section 31 show, and that would be to suit Alex Kurtzman saying it's going to be set in a surprising time frame. I think that would be a pretty surprising time frame. Conrad, what do you think?
That is a very exciting shout if that's the case. I mean, I think all of us have wanted to know what happened next in Enterprise. And as you say, the Romulan War was, to me, was always like the Clone War in Star Wars. It was always like, what's the Clone Wars? What's the Clone Wars? We all pictured what it'd be like. And okay, what we got wasn't quite what we expected.
Indeed.
Having said that, once we got to the animated series, it was much better. So I think that's a really interesting part of that Star Trek history that we haven't had yet. And if that meant that there's an opportunity to tie up or give us fans a hint of what happened to the crew of the NX-01 after the end of season four, not put the focus on it, but still have it almost on the sides. You know, who wouldn't like to see the NX-01 kicking butt, you know, in the Romulan War? I think that'd be a fantastic way of providing some closure to that unfortunately cut short series, but also exploring an interesting era of Star Trek that we've never really delved into before. I think there's been novels about it, but obviously we know that novels can get washed away by the TV canon at any point. So yeah, that's a really good shout. And it'll be interesting because it'd almost be Georgiou coming full circle from being a significant part of Section 31, you know, in season two of Discovery, right back to its creation. That could be interesting, actually. Yeah, I would like to see that and see how that develops. That's certainly an unexpected era. I wasn't expecting that one.
Do you have a theory or a wish for Discovery, Picard, Lower Decks, or the future of the franchise that you'd like to share? Tweet them to me at Weekly Trek or email them to me at weeklytrek@thetricordertransmissions.com, and I might feature your theory in a future episode. Well, that's all the time we've got for this episode of Weekly Trek. Thank you so much to my guest, Mr. Locutus of Borg himself, for joining me today. Conrad, how can people contact you if they want to continue the conversation?
I think, yeah, the main place that I tend to exist is on Twitter. So if you want to connect, I'm always happy to talk Star Trek, be silly, always posting random stuff. So UK_Locutus on Twitter is the main place that you can find me. And thank you very much for having me on the show. It's been a lot of fun.
It has been my pleasure. And you can find this show on Twitter at Weekly Trek and me at Alexander T. Perry. And if you enjoy the show, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on your podcast player of choice. And please check out some of the other great shows on the Tricorder Transmissions. And if you like our shows, please also consider becoming a Patreon of Tricorder, which you can find at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. And lastly, if you're looking for Star Trek news on the internet, I hope you will turn to trekcore.com. Well, thank you, Conrad. Thank you to all of my listeners. And until next week, live long and prosper.